if Watford do go down in the next week, it's not on Nigel Pearson that they've gone down.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Hello, patrons, and welcome to your Tuesday special. My name's Suj, as you know, Planet FPL in the house. How are we doing, James?
I'm not too bad, thanks, mate. Yourself?
Yeah, not bad at all. I know we don't put the video out for patrons, but I will snap this and put this on Slack in a second. Manchild came to the studio today. I'm obviously in the studio in the office. Guess what he bought me? Check this out. Yeah, James, I'm going to show you on screen. This is a cupcake that I'm showing James.
With a fucking jam tart on top.
This is an amazing pink frosting on top with a jammy dodger with a heart in the middle. And I'm confused. Like, it's not Valentine's Day. So why is Manchild, the producer, giving me a very, you know, nice cupcake? But to be honest, I'm just going to bag it up and give it to my missus later. And there you go.
Maybe he took it for his Tinder date meet this morning and she didn't turn up.
Exactly. I don't know what's at 8:45 in the morning to be presented a very delicate cupcake by Manchild, the producer, was quite a treat today. So, you know, all good things. Nice way to start the day. Happy enough that Jimenez only picked up an assist yesterday. Hallelujah.
I was thinking of you watching the game last night, thinking, especially after the Ings penalty miss, for those who didn't know, that your transfer
been a lot
was
worse.
Jimenez to Ings. And I did think, do you know what? I don't particularly, from an FPL point of view, I don't particularly want Jimenez to go off, but I will laugh myself silly at you if he does.
Yeah, good old game for Wolves again. They are so reliable, our Wolves, so.
All right, we will talk about that more on Thursday and also a little bit on Sky, because I brought Matt Doherty in for Sky as my last transfer and captained the bastard. So that went very well, actually. So I felt like I'd earned that bit of rubber to green with that one recently, because it's just completely gone against me with stuff in the last couple of weeks. Anyway, we're not here to talk about Wolves or Sky. A different W. Someone else not used to too many Ws. No disrespect to the Watford guys, and we have got a couple of Watford patrons. Yeah, what's the fuck? That's the first question to ask, isn't it? What the fuck?
It's interesting because the demise started at the back end of last season, really, which was masked over by them getting to the FA Cup final to a certain degree. Would you agree?
I think
the second half of last season wasn't as good as the first half of last season.
Yeah, but I think a lot of that bad league form could be related to the fact that they were in the FA Cup final. It's not uncommon to see, with respect, clubs of Watford size get to a major cup final and their league form fall off a cliff a little bit. They had nothing to play for. I realise it finished badly. But I think demise is not really the right word, because as a football club, and this is the really interesting thing about the Pozzo family and the ownership of the football club, is the football club, whatever you think of what's going on behind the scenes in terms of the sackings and stuff, and we'll look at some of them, which is mad, that football club is in a far better place than when they took over it. Like, far better. And it kind of contradicts with everything that you think is right from a footballing perspective. They have been, since they came up in, 15, they've been pretty stable. They've been pretty stable enough. When they came up, you had the Igalo and Deeney season, but nobody really given much of a prayer. And to the point that most people now think, generally speaking, they'll be quite safe. I think even when we did our predictions pre-season with the correspondents, a lot of people generally had them at sort of around about 13th, and might surprise a little bit, was a general consensus. And they've had a bad season for a number of reasons, but I'm not even sure if it is bad, really, on reflection. Watford is not a big football club. And one of the things that I think's really frustrated the fan base over this whole sacking on Sunday is the lack of information in terms of why. And they do pride themselves as very much a bit of a family club, going back to, you know, Elton John, Graham Taylor, all that kind of thing. And to put a statement out on Sunday that didn't even thank the manager for any reason instantly causes alarm bells to say, right, what's happened? So in terms of rumours, we've had a few that have gone around. So one that went around was that Nigel Pearson punched Adam Messina, either at halftime or after the game on Friday night. Another one is that Pearson went berserk and then there was a mass breakout of a brawl between players. Troy Deeney was on BN Sports yesterday and has denied both of them. And actually the way he spoke, I felt it came across as very genuine. And I believed what he said. It seems more to me now, having reflected on it and reading between the lines, is that there's been a mass bust up between manager and chairman. And the way that this chairman changes his managers, that's it. You're out the door, mate. And it really doesn't matter what anybody thinks about it. That's what I think has happened. I think if that's the case, though, what you need to do is swallow your pride for a week and get over the line first. Because if Aston Villa get a good result, well, let's put it a different way. If Watford lose to Manchester City tonight, which most of us would predict, and then Aston Villa get a good result against Arsenal, they're in shit street, mate. They're going to start shitting themselves. They're not safe yet. Listen, by the time some of you listen to this, it might be over. It might beat Man City and be safe and it might be over, but it doesn't feel like that way. It feels like it's going to go down to the wire. And if they go down, it's partly the chairman's fault, a big way here, right? It's not to say it would have been any different if Pearson stayed, but there's no way they've just given themselves a better opportunity. No way.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, okay, in that 3 or 4 minutes that you've been speaking there, James, you've touched on so many different things that I think we need to take a step back and let's go through it bit by bit. I mean, you're right in terms of the history of Watford and since they've come back up. For me, I always look at Watford and the thing that comes to mind is strong physical side and hard to play against and beat. And especially that Troy Deeney Cojones kind of mentality when we talked about the Gooners at the time. But yeah, Watford are a team that will get in your face. And if you're not up for it on the day, they can beat you. And in amongst that sprinkling of Deulofeu has got some skill and talent. And they've had some good creative players in their time as well. So they are never... They comfortably sit in perhaps a similar bracket to Everton, Newcastle, Southampton, dare I say West Ham. But, you know,
what do you mean, similar bracket?
In terms of performance expectation, definitely not in size of club, but in terms of where I would... if Watford finished above Newcastle and Everton, wouldn't surprise me, but also... They'd be thereabouts. They were all in that bracket of 10th to 15th.
I don't think too many of us thought going into this season that they would go down.
Definitely not. But then you think, I mean, many people maybe have never been to Watford. It's not the biggest place.
No, it's on the outskirts.
If you wanted to really stretch and push it, you could consider that it was London. So we're recording, boss.
It's on the tube map.
Yeah. Well, what, zone... Nah, outside of zone 5 doesn't count, mate.
It's on a tube map. No. But you wouldn't. You'd get the train from Euston. You would never get the fucking tube there. No way. Unless you were already on the west of London. Where do you want to start with this? Do you want to start with the ownership? Do you want to start with Pearson?
The other thing that you mentioned is Troy Deeney. I mean, I watched the same interview that you shared with me. And I agree with you that... he is telling the truth, but I also feel like he's towing the company line a little bit as well. If something would have happened, would you have expected him to say, look, we did have a bit of a bust up? Or
no, I wouldn't have expected him to do the interview. That's more the point. I think if there's shit to hide,
yeah, sure.
Don't put yourself in that situation, right? It's a Zoom call. There's probably not any money in it for him or anything. So why do that? Why put yourself out there if there's all these allegations behind? And he it wasn't like he hid from the questions. He went out and fronted it himself and said, look, these are the rumours I've heard. They ain't happened. So it wasn't like he was pushed in terms of, was there a bust up Friday night? Was there a fight or anything like that? He led himself down the own path of saying, I've heard all this crap on the internet. I want to put the record straight. So he's chosen to do that. So... Unless he thinks that coming out and just blatantly lying about it is going to give the team the better chance over the next two games, I don't see why you would put yourself in that position if it did happen. That's my instinct. I mean, look, it could be that something's happened in the dressing room and it's been exaggerated. I don't think it's a secret that Pearson went off his nut at half-time during the game. And in fairness, you'd probably expect any other manager in the same situation to do the same.
Yeah, they were rubbish in the first half.
With respect to yourselves, mate, you can't be getting beat 3-0 by you at half-time, whoever you are. Especially in a game of that importance, I mean, where you know one win and you're safe, like how many for you?
Whether it's West Ham or anyone, I mean, how many times is City 3-0 up at half time or Liverpool 3-0 up at half time? It doesn't matter who you're playing. 3-0 at half time is bad against anyone. I bet you could count on one hand the number of times that a team's 3-0 up at half time.
So, Joe, I'd like to point out to you that Manchester City played Watford tonight, and the last time these two sides met, Manchester City were 5-0 up in 15 minutes.
Mm. Well, Watford City is a fixture that we've talked about, is peppered with Watford basically just getting smashed. Five, sixes, yeah. Sevens, eights. Not two or threes, but yeah, more than five goals. So, I don't think today will be, City losing on the weekend, Pep will get them up for it. But let's talk about Nigel Pearson first, I think, rather than the ownership.
Well, he obviously got in the job in December, 20th in the league, low expectations, was kind of a different movement to previous managers they'd bought, many of which were non-British. And it felt like get him in and this is the guy who's going to try and keep us up, basically. That's very much how it felt. And in terms of his remit, I don't know if that was his remit. I presume there wasn't a remit beyond keep us up. There is some speculation that he might have been in for quite a bit of a bonus, probably a seven-figure sum. If he'd kept Watford up, there is a suspicion that...
What, so they sacked him before they stayed up?
There is a suspicion of that, but as I said to someone else, I can't quite see the sense in that. Where you can save yourself a million or two, when if you go down, mate, it's going to cost you about 100 million. So I can't see the sense in worrying about the million or £2 that they'd be paying him in bonus that they might want to pay him. His record since he took over, which we mentioned on the main podcast yesterday, would have them 12th since the time that he took over. And don't forget that he walked into difficult fixtures to start with. His first game was Liverpool away at Anfield. And I think we all walked away from that game thinking, do you know what? They played all right here. That's the best I've seen them play this season. Then they beat Manchester United. They had a good little run, included wins against Wolves. They should have beat Tottenham. They had a very good win against Aston Villa. Then they had a little dip. Then lockdown come. The results since lockdown haven't been great, but then they haven't been great for anybody in the bottom six or seven, basically, because everybody's been falling over themselves. And the important thing was they won the games against Norwich and Newcastle. And importantly, in both of those games, obviously came from behind to do so. That's a good trait. Because there's not many games you can think of during this lockdown period where teams have come from behind and won. They won two in a row to get themselves out the shit, basically. So when the announcement came up, like most people were probably watching Bournemouth and Southampton on Sunday, heard them say on BT Sport that their understanding was that he'd been sacked. My reaction straight away was to get on Twitter and just go like, what the fuck? Whether it's right or wrong, someone explain to me like what do you think's going on here? Because that just doesn't make any sense. There was no bit of me that finished watching that game Friday night and thought that manager's getting sacked. Even in the summer, to be very honest with you. I just thought you've had a very bad night at the office. Like the things we spoke about yesterday about key component missing in Sayeti and Kapu, for example. It didn't explain the way they played, but it caused them multiple problems during that particular game. And what Pearson did great with the team was get it a little bit back to basics. Getting a threatening player like Decorey closer to Deeney so they had more power in advanced positions. It did mean, yes, that they probably went a little bit more direct, but you're in the shit. You play to the strengths of you've got, right? They've got physical, powerful and fast players. Get it into the final third, and obviously then you can use the sprinkling of quality of Deulofeu, the excessive pace of Sarr, Decore's direct running and the physicality of Deeney. Actually, when you put that four together, they've actually got a sprinkling of everything. We've mentioned as well that Deulofeu has been a bigger miss for them than I think people realise, because in the tighter games, he's a real bit of quality who will step over and beat someone. And you just can't believe that this decision is on footballing reasons. It can't be. If they'd have made that decision at the end of the season and said, thanks very much, mate. That's what we wanted. That's what we needed. Shake your hand. Piss off. We'll go back to having someone who wants to play a continental style of football again. Fair enough. And because it's them, you wouldn't particularly be surprised about it. 15 managers in some ludicrous period of time. Excessive. But we're two games to go. I mean, look, whatever's happened behind the scenes, if Watford do go down in the next week, it's not on Nigel Pearson that they've gone down.
No, and the only reason people are saying that they are likely to go down now is because of their fixtures are very difficult. But you are still reliant on Bournemouth and Aston Villa to get a result, or Villa two results in their next games, which is still not a given. They could easily lose all of their games that they've got left. So Watford still have a chance of staying safe. They could easily get a draw against Arsenal. But
I think 1 point will probably be enough.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think 1 point will be enough. So they're likely to stay up. And I agree with you there that it can't be based on footballing reasons at all. So he doesn't come across as the happiest kind of fellow in the world. He is a grumpy bugger, is Nigel Pearson. I don't think he was too dissimilar when he was at Leicester. He comes across as an abrasive, is the word I would use about him. No nonsense, no book BS, abrasive.
The one thing I would say about him, and I thought this, what was the game they got well beat at home? Southampton. And I thought this after the Southampton game, and I wish I'd said it in hindsight, was that he just felt very low-key. Like, he didn't feel like he had energy. And I felt that a few times afterwards, that in certain interviews, he didn't feel like he was, I don't know, I feel like you need your manager to be more up for it, if you will, in terms of just the way he's displaying his mannerism. And he felt very nonplussed about things. And I don't know if, particularly after the Southampton game, there was, or it might have been before the Newcastle game, I can't remember, but it was obviously one game where the three lads, Andre Gray and a couple of others, broke some curfew, didn't they? Lockdown rules, etc. And I think that caused a little bit of upheaval within the dressing room. But then he slowly integrated those players back in within the squad as well, so it was all forgiven. He just felt like he wasn't as motivated, but I don't know. It's very difficult when you're on the outside. I feel like I'm nitpicking trying to say that about him, actually.
Yeah, the interview after the game against us, he could tell he was visibly irritated by the result and what had happened and what they needed to do. Yeah, I think he was a little bit more, call it passionate or full of energy then, but he probably went into that interview knowing he was going to get asked a bunch of difficult questions and didn't want to really answer them, but did a reasonable enough job of holding their hands up that they were not good enough the first half, better in the second. They had to do what they needed to do, but he felt more, he had a certain amount of chutzpah after that. In that interview, I thought he gave as much as good as he was getting.
Fair enough.
But he isn't Klopp, is he? Or he's not a Pep or one of these charismatic managers. No.
No. I mean, what people remember him most
for... But he never will be.
No, what people remember him most for is the ostrich in the sand comment when he was Leicester manager, right? And basically, the reason he didn't start the season for Leicester, when Leicester would go on to win the title, and I don't think any of us thinks they would have under Nigel Pearson, but Nigel Pearson did incredibly well to keep them up the previous season. They had a dramatic upturn in fortunes in the last 8 or 9 games, where I think they won 6 or 7 games to stay up, and then stay up quite comfortably. The reason he never got that job was because he kept mouthing off behind the scenes. So it could well be that that's what's happened here, and that's what I'm led to think now, is that he's got the ump, and he said... I think he's someone that he won't mince his words. If he's got something to say, he'll say it. And I think he said something to the chairman's pissed him off. And I actually don't think at this stage there's anything more to it, to this story, than that. I just think the chairman should have said, mate, you need to fucking keep us up, shut your mouth, and then sack him next week. Because
roll like that.
Well, no, and you can tell that from their history of sacking managers, right? It's Giampaolo Pozzo was the guy who bought the club, who also owns Udinese in Italy. They also own Granada. Granada's in Spain. Granada's now been taken over by a Chinese businessman, I think, a few years ago. It's Giampaolo's son, Gino, who now runs the day-to-day operations at Watford.
He's the chairman.
That's correct, yeah. I mean, their list of managers half of them you'll forget. I'd just like to give you a quick rundown of these. So Sean Dyche, believe it or not, was in charge when they bought the club. Yeah, our things could have been very different, but you never know, right? For Sean Dyche as well, he obviously didn't fit the model of the type of manager that they wanted. Binned him off. Zola came in, got them into the playoffs, obviously lost that final to Palace after the incredible victory against Leicester in the semi-final. I'm sure everybody's seen the Deeney goal after the Anthony knockout penalty miss. He started the next season badly. He was gone. Giuseppe Sannino, is that a name you know?
No.
I even had to look back at it and go, who was this guy? First job outside.
How many games was he in charge?
So he was in charge from December 13 to August 14. Zola previously had 18 months. That's a long time at Watford. Sannino, I'm looking at Giovanni Bada Amrabat's thread that he did. Is really good. And he said the Italian took the decision to resign despite winning 4 out of 5 games at the start of the 14-15 season, stating that he'd gone as far as he could in the role. Oscar Garcia had the role for a year after doing quite well at Brighton. He resigned less than a month. He was only there for a month. He resigned less than a month into the job due to health reasons, so you can't blame the owners on that one. Then Billy McKinley had it for a month. This is a funny one. The Scot earned 4 points from his first 2 games but was sacked after the Pozzos admitted to making a mistake with giving him the job. So he won 1 and drawn 1 for his first 2 games and went, he's a mistake, we'll sack him. Then Jokanović came in, short-term contract, got them promoted to the Premier League. And then they didn't renew on him. They couldn't negotiate terms on a new contract. Jokanović left, and I think everybody thought, well, these lot will go straight back down. And then they got Kike Sanchez Flores, which was a great appointment, really.
Yeah.
That was the Ighalo-Deeney season. They did quite well, but they didn't keep him. Walter Mazzarri came in, and the football was bad. But Mazzarri as well came with a very high reputation, having done well previously in Italy. They ended up finishing 17th that year, but quite safe from relegation. He was binned. Then there was Marco Silva, who they obviously got from Hull after he nearly kept Hull up the year before. Started like a train, if you remember. Then all the Everton rumours came in, and then they had a disastrous run, and they went, well, wish we'd let him go now. We'll sack you as well. Yeah. Javi Gracia lasted a good 19, 20 months.
He did okay.
He did. I kind of feel like, I know what you're saying, the run before the cup final, it felt like the writing was on the wall if they started badly. And let's be honest, they started very badly. Flores comes in, and I think Watford fans were of the opinion that they didn't want him back, but also felt he was very unlucky to lose the job the first time, so we'll give him a go. The second game in is the 8-0 to Manchester City. Another disaster, he gets 10 games. And then Pearson took over in December. And as we said, his form since he took over would have Watford in 12th. And I don't know what the expectation of the Watford owners is in terms of what they want if this is a footballing decision. Because 12th in the Premier League, really, and I don't mean this horribly, is about the limits of what Watford's expectations can be given in terms of consistency. That's not to say they can't have a great year and do like what Sheffield United have done this year, or have a good couple of years like Wolves have had, but Wolves are a far bigger club, and actually in terms of size of club, Sheffield United's a far bigger club than Watford as well. So I don't know what the expectations are. What do you want from that football club? It almost relates a little bit to like what I said with Wigan. Now Watford are a far bigger club than Wigan, but what's your expectations of this club? It's got no scale to become a massive football club in England, no matter how much money you possibly had. It's not possible. So what's your expectations? It feels like the remit is the target should be qualifying for Europe. And I just think that's impossible. And you're just going to keep changing managers over and over and over. And eventually, sorry to the Watford guys on Patreon, but eventually, if it's not this year, they will go down at some point in the next few years. There are certain clubs you can look at and you know they won't stay forever. Burnley's another good example of that. The second Sean Dyche goes, they're in trouble. You know that. Look at Charlton, hung around forever, didn't they? And then Kerbishley kept missing out on getting them into Europe. And I know it's a long time ago. And all the Charlton fans wanted, we've got to get rid of Kerbishley now. He can't take us to the next level. I mean, the next level doesn't look so fucking clever since he went, does it? It's been a 15-year disaster for them. So where Watford are status-wise as a football club, this is actually their best spell since the great side of the 1980s that had John Barnes, Luther Blissett, etc.
Don't you think though that they do spend enough money to buy enough players to always stick in and around?
Yeah.
They'll spend 15 to 25 million on players here or there, like your Danny Welbecks of the world or whatever, and they'll be good enough for that bottom half of the Premier League type players. And they will always spend that money. I don't think the Pozzos can be accused of not spending money.
No, not at all. I think what they've done business-wise has been very good for the football club as well, in terms of they've supposedly got very good scouting networks in South America, which refer back to, say, the signing of Richarlison. They also bought, I don't know if he'll ever break into the team, but the Venezuelan kid, I might have pronounced his name wrong, Penranada, who I watched in the under-19 World Cup final against England, and he was Venezuela's standout player. You can tell he's got a bit about him. It might just be that culturally and physically the English game might not be right for him, but he might even be a name to watch out for next year. So they've got good scouting networks in terms of what they're doing there. I wouldn't say they've bought badly. I'd look at them as a back four and think, you've been average every year that you've been in our league. But as a unit, they've always had spells where it felt like they've defended quite well. And maybe that's part with the influence of the overseas coaching, that they're being well drilled, etc.
Yep.
But they're not
big and strong, physical.
To be honest, yeah. What I was going to say is they're not the sort of size you would consider really looking at and thinking you play out from the back particularly. It's not to say they don't, but it's very much, if they're going to do that, they feed it into Capu and then play from there. It's not so much, the centre-halves aren't going to step out as such. No. Fullbacks are average. I mean, I know Messina got stick. Oh, Femenia had a fucking nightmare on Friday night, mate. He's crapped. He falls into that line. He's crapped. He might be an FPL asset, but he's not a great footballer.
It's because he's cheap. That's the only reason why.
Well, part of that. But I don't know what the expectations is. I feel like what they'll do is, if they'll stay up, they will appoint another overseas manager with the expectations of it being at least a top half finish. And if they don't achieve it, they'll probably change manager again. And it's a repetitive cycle that eventually will catch up with them.
Well, I mean, four managers in one season is...
It's never been done.
It's mental.
And you might argue that obviously Hayden Mullins was caretaker for a brief spell. He's obviously not the permanent manager at the moment. But it would be great to see him get the job if he's an experienced and skilled coach. Just a couple of notes in terms of reference for tonight. I don't think there's anything we can read into it, but he had the fixture against Leicester and they played a 4-4-2. They had another fixture afterwards before Pearson took over. Forgive me, I can't remember who it was, but then they played more of a 4-2-3-1. So I don't think there's anything you can read in terms of expectations of what you might see tonight. I suspect it'll probably look a little bit like a 4-5-1 and they'll go in very deep, which is not necessarily the worst idea against Manchester City, particularly if they can try and exploit. I think you might get Sarr up against Zinchenko tonight. That's the target of what you want to get on there, is try and get him going at Zinchenko on the counter-attack, and you might have some joy.
And what do you think your prediction on what is going to happen tonight is? That City going to tear him a new one?
No, I don't think City are arsed. I think, yeah, of course, it's difficult to look beyond City in any football game, but 2-0. I don't think it'll go off tonight. And I think for Watford as well, there's also going to be the conscious of the goal difference in the back of their minds. If they go 2-0 down, you know you'll beat. At that point, you've got 5 days to Arsenal, which keep the score down as much as possible, because it could come to that. Anything more than a 2-0 defeat, and really the goal difference doesn't come into it at all. Because I think it's 4 goals difference at the moment, isn't it? If they lose by 3 and then lose again at the weekend and Bournemouth win, Bournemouth will finish above them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if Watford can lose 1-0 tonight, do you know what? That's not a bad result.
It's not the worst result.
It gives them the advantage that another 1-goal defeat at Arsenal at the weekend, and they might even if Bournemouth or Villa get a 3 points somewhere, could still stay up.
I'm of the opinion that if City score early, then it could end up being 3 or 4. But if they keep it tight, then it might not. I'll be honest with you, it's hard to predict. I mean, City can batter you in the last 15 minutes when you're tired and tired of running around and what have you. They bring on fresh legs and they can destroy you. So, I mean, City are going to win, but we thought they were going to win every game since the restart, and they lost at Chelsea and they lost at Southampton. So they haven't. And in between those, they've battered teams fours and fives. So, yeah, you don't know what's going to happen. I definitely think City are going to win, of course. But you're right. Yeah, it might not be as crazy as we potentially think.
No, I don't think it will be. I think City will win. I think it'll be fairly routine.
There we go. So that's it. Patrons, there's your little Tuesday special. Thank you for tuning in and supporting Planet FPL as always. We do know we've got some Watford patrons, so jump in the chat and Slack. Let us know what your thoughts are and whether or not you think you're still going to stay up.
I think they will.
Yes, I agree with you on that as well. As always, guys, stay safe. We'll be back at you tomorrow with a bit of Tot and Ham. But as always, good luck with tonight's games. Ciao for now.
Thanks, patrons. Cue music, please, man child.
The Fantasy Football Show.